Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is once again in session. One hell of a week. I cannot believe the Super Bowl was last Sunday. I feel like I've aged a year in the last week, mainly because of what's gone on politically. It feels like just incredible. But the Super Bowl happened. I'm going to brag because I predicted on this show, recorded, verifiable, that the final score would be 34-20. Final score ended up being 31-20. So I will be starting an offshore gambling site in a couple weeks. It will be called whiskeycongress.whatever. I'm making that up. But
whiskeycongress.net. Whiskeycongressbet.net.
There we go. We got a name.
Well, there it is. There's our side hustle. Jumping into going back to the Super Bowl, I think when we talked about the game, I said it was going to be slow early while they kind of felt each other out. And then what I didn't really kind of tabulate was Patrick Mahomes I think he was just tight. I mean, it's a big game. Yeah. The kid's young. And he played tight, San Francisco's defense is good.
Yeah.
But he was just, he was a little errant on throws that he normally would be very accurate on. And he was holding on to the ball in situations. Again, part of it was because of San Fran's defense, but he's played good defenses before, and normally he was releasing those balls. So I think he was a little conservative early, even through the third quarter, and then all of a sudden he remembered who he was. And, the kid just woke up. I think when we talked last, I said, listen, those guys are like the Golden State Warriors of the NFL. I mean, they can put up points in a hurry, and the next thing you know, you're down double digits. And that's
what happened. They were down double digits, and then they were up double digits.
Right. I mean, they have multiple guys with world-class speed that over the course of a game is just, it's hard to keep up with and keep track of.
And they contained the San Francisco pass rush pretty well. I mean, they got to Mahomes a little bit, but he was able to, had a clean pocket a lot, was able to move around and get some space, and then made the plays. So I didn't know this until Monday morning, but apparently Jay-Z and Beyonce sat during the national anthem. Now, I know this because I saw a clip that Tommy Lauren reacts to Jay-Z and Beyonce sitting during the anthem. I did watch it. It was exactly what you'd expect. It was, they are disrespecting our troops, and they're blah, 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 blah.
And it's the freedom that allows them to make all that money and rap and sing about the stuff that sells non-white.
Oh, you saw it.
No, I mean, you don't have to see it. I mean, it's all the conservatives, all the Trump supporters, they all say the same things, right? I mean, it's just like, you have the freedom to, but because you do this, I'm going to attack you and hope that you lose X, Y, and Z.
Right.
Now, listen, progressive people on the progressive left do the same thing, right? Like, they want to boycott everything that they don't like, right? Like, the whole, you got to boycott Chick-fil-A because they donate money to this group that did this thing. And I get it, right? Like, that's just the weapon of choice now is to, attack
cancel,
the pockets.
Cancel boycott.
Culture.
Yep.
But the funny thing is just like, listen, Jay-Z and Beyonce are just at a level where you're not going to, Tommy Lauren is not going to make a dent.
All she wanted was to get her name back out there because she's been irrelevant. She had her moment in the sun.
And a lot of those Trump, horn tooters, mouthpieces, exactly, surrogates, they're really starting to lose their bluster. And part of that is because of Trump himself. Trump doesn't like to be outdone. He is his own mouthpiece. He is his own surrogate. He doesn't want other people talking for him. Like, he does all the talking. Like, the rest of you, make sure that you take a back seat to me, Trump, as I run the show. And he's constantly tweeting. He's constantly talking. He's constantly doing something. So at some point in time, everybody else, putting their input in, you're a sideshow to the sideshow.
Yeah.
But you're right. She needed a way to get herself back out there.
And I don't think it really worked.
No.
it just happened to pop up on my news feed, and I watched it and went, yeah, you're still not relevant to me. Obviously Jay-Z and Beyonce did that as a form of, the continuing the Kaepernick protest and keeping that visible, but it really didn't, because again, I didn't know about it until Tommy Lawrence yap was blabbing about it. Did you know about it?
I knew about it. It was a big thing. I saw it, just paying attention to Twitter during the game.
Okay.
It became obvious that it had happened. I missed it. I was busy dealing with smoking meat.
How dare you? The troops died for you to smoke that meat.
Yeah,
and you didn't.
I know. I it didn't go the way I wanted to. It actually came out really good.
Good.
It didn't do what I wanted to do. But either way, so I missed the first, probably the first 5-10 minutes of the game, like wrapping up this whole meat thing. And you know, people were talking about it, but the funny thing is, so there was a guy at the party that I went to who complained about it. Right.
All right.
And I asked him, I'm like, so you guys watched the Nancy, now where I watched it, right? It's a big, you know, massive 100-inch screen on a projection, in high definition and all this other stuff. So, I mean, it's enormous.
Okay.
And so I asked him, I said, well, while you were watching the national anthem and they showed Jay-Z and Beyonce sitting and you know, this upset you so much, well, what were you doing? And he was just like, I'm sitting right here. I'm like, weird.
But hold on though. The people who actually stand up and put their hand over their hearts at the national, for the national anthem.
I don't have a problem with it. I don't, because listen, I just
consider it stage.
No, I mean, I just, when like guys that I know that served and their family or have family members that served for years and years and years, I know people who do it.
Okay.
And their reasons are just like, listen, I hear the song, I see the flag, that's what I do.
I was watching a girl at Game On, the bar in Lakewood, do it, and that's what made me laugh.
Yeah, I mean, but if it's happening at a house, and if I know the person, and I've seen him do it on more than one occasion, and I've seen him do it before this whole thing with Kaepernick, then I don't really have a problem with it, right?
Okay.
I mean, but this guy, like, if you're gonna sit, if you're so passionate about it that, you know, you need to just go on and on and on about it after halftime when no one's even thinking about it anymore, it's kind of ridiculous to me. That, you know, like, you have the audacity to fucking bring this up, so.
Okay, I didn't know that. I thought you did it right away. But anyway, so that happened, and then we have politics. So, before we get into that, so, okay, this week in politics was maybe the biggest week in politics of my life. We had an impeachment acquittal. We had the Iowa caucuses, which were an absolute disaster. Okay, let's try to go chronologically. So, Iowa caucus, complete clusterfuck. They couldn't get the counts right. No one seemed to know what they were doing. It looked like a disheveled mess.
So the way that night went, you know, I've got work and meeting stuff, and you know, I was held up late, and I'm reaching out to you, like, you know, I finally get free at like 9 o'clock, and I'm just like, all right, where are we? And you're like, well, it looks like they're not gonna until. So I'm like, oh, okay, well, it's Iowa. They're a hour behind, like, I'm trying to do the math in my head, like, all right, so it makes sense, I guess, that we don't have anything yet. And, you know, I go home and get into my night, and I just didn't have, you know, dealing with the kid and all that other stuff. And so, right before I go to bed, like, we still have nothing.
Correct.
Right? And then I wake up in the morning.
And you got nothing.
And we still got nothing.
They announce at, like, I've been working from home this week, so I was able to keep the TV on, and I think it was around noon, but I won't swear to that, but they said, we expect to have the majority of precincts report by this afternoon.
And that's like, so it happened. It started on Monday.
Right.
This is now Tuesday.
Noon at Tuesday, and they're saying we hope to have half of the results of people caucusing in Iowa. It ended up being a complete clusterfuck. Pete Buttigieg claims victory before anything was released. Caught a lot of heat for that, although he does end up doing very well. In fact, getting the most percentage points.
Essentially, him and Bernie tied. I mean,
right.
I think he edged Bernie out by
0.1%.
Skin of my balls. So it's essentially a win for both of them. Like, I mean, I think Buttigieg gets another delegate.
Yeah,
or
I think
two,
he's one more than Bernie.
But that's, like, chances are whoever wins this is going to win it by substantially more than one or two. So that's not a huge deal. And people, you know, all the Bernie supporters, Sean King comes out there and they talk about how Pete Buttigieg had his campaign had invested in the app that was used in Iowa to, you know, basically collect and tabulate and report the results. And then so they try to get the conspiracy going that somehow Pete Buttigieg sabotage the results so that somehow he would come up with a tie with Bernie. I don't know.
So the Bernie folks are spinning that. And I kind of got a close look at the... Well, first of all, let me say this. If Pete Buttigieg can go from South Bend mayor to presidential candidate who cooks a way to fix an election in a year, you got my vote.
Maybe that's our guy. Maybe that's our guy. It's crazy. And it also, the reason that Iowa has that app is because of the Bernie campaign, right? Because in 2016, they got burned in the Nevada caucus, and it caused a whole big fucking thing where they basically had to, they wanted to, you know, re-caucused or whatever. So,
I'd forgotten that.
The Bernie Sanders campaign, they go into Iowa and say, if it's a caucus, this is how we want it handled. So Iowa's just like, all right, cool, fine. You know, we'll do whatever you want. And I guess the issue is they never stress test the app.
How the fuck do you not do
that?
I'm
not a scientist. I'm not an engineer. I'm not a, I don't deal in science. But, like, if I'm going into something like that, I mean, I'm going to stress test it, right? I'm going to figure out, like, all right, let's just say, let's just say we get 100% participation and all the precincts report at the exact same second. What happens?
Right.
Right? I mean,
and that's a lot of what I do is process validation, which is test stuff so that when it matters, you know it works.
Right. Like, so
this is a presidential election.
Right. And the fact that you get to this point and it doesn't work, I mean, it's mind blowing. I mean, that is classic Democrat to the T.
Yep.
You know, and it's just like.
I was Facebook posting about how only Democrats could fuck this up the way they did, and all my conservative friends were putting laughing emojis at me and whatever. And they're right. It's, you know, right. the whole.
You didn't even have competition, right? Like, it's not like you're. It wasn't the Republican. It wasn't some independent. Like, it's all you versus you, and somehow you still managed to fuck it up.
And I'm all for showing, you know, how the sausage gets made, how the process works. I'm all for that. But watching a caucus with people in Iowa getting told, well, you're standing here now, but now you got to move and stand over here. Because if you don't get 15% of it, I'm like, this looks, it looked like it belonged in 1842.
It's ridiculous.
It really looked awful.
Right. I mean,
well, 1842, obviously, but before it existed, whatever. Right?
But I mean, again, I've been talking about this for the last, I don't know how many months. But I think it's just absurd that Iowa kind of kicks us all off, right? And then you're going to go to New Hampshire, again, two of the most least diverse states whatsoever. And then those two states going into South Carolina, you know, they're going to be people. No one's going to drop out after Iowa right now.
Sure.
But in New Hampshire, you may see an Amy Klobuchar say, all right, well, fuck it, or something along those lines.
Yeah, she had a bad showing. Well, actually, not that bad.
Actually didn't have a bad showing, but it's just the...
Fifth. Fifth, just behind Biden.
Right, in which Biden had a terrible showing for him. And again, I've been saying this for a while, but because the narrative has been Biden can beat Trump, blah, 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 because he was the vice president and he's got this line, he's so presidential, then everyone keeps pushing this narrative, which in turn, for whatever reason, black voters are still supporting Biden. I don't necessarily, like, I believe it. That's what the polls are saying. I don't trust polls much at all, but that's really our only data set. And the few sources I go to for information that kind of aggregate all the various data from the polls are saying that black voters are supporting Biden. So I have to go with it. But for him to have this type of showing, this also shows, again, why Iowa and New Hampshire aren't the place to go with. You know why? Because there's fucking no black voters there.
I think I looked it up, and Iowa was 94% white.
Right, 94% white, but they've got like a 3% black population. Right. So even the remaining six, it's not like it's all black after that.
No, it's probably
largely
Asian because of the colleges.
Right, so it's crazy that those that Iowa and New Hampshire you're going to go to and people...
Meltdown coming.
Well, no. It's not a meltdown. It's just it's a little bit early to talk about Elizabeth Warren and, you know, the different, you know, all the diversity she found in New Hampshire, but... You know, we'll get there. We'll get there. But so you have this whole thing where they finally get it figured out, and then from Iowa caucus disaster, you go right into the president's impeachment trial and the vote on the acquittal, which we all knew from the get-go how this was going to go down.
Yep.
Right. There was no real threat of getting a majority to vote to remove the president. We knew that before the impeachment process started. We knew it during the impeachment inquiry. We've known it since the articles were handed down, and we've known it since the trial that he was going to get acquitted, and this was going to be it. So it's funny you bring up how monumental this week was in terms of the amount of political, you know, massive political things that are happening, but which is crazy. Like, you literally, I mean, like, this has so much less drama to it than when Clinton got impeached, right? Like, you know what I mean? I mean, like, this was covered just as intensely, but there was serious concern about Clinton and if he was going to get removed from office.
Yeah.
Right? And there were a number of people who were on the side of actually removing him that flipped sides in the end because they felt that it was for the good of the country. Like, what they said was they acknowledged that he lied under oath. They acknowledged that he, you know, broke a law, but they were not going to, that was not a reason to remove the president.
Right.
You know, well, especially what he lied about.
What he lied about is the key there, right? He lied about a blowjob, period.
Right.
And this guy lied, Trump lied about, or Trump was involved
in... He
didn't lie. Didn't talk. Didn't testify. No one did. But the degree of disaster that the... Oh, sorry. So the big news there, though, was Mitt Romney broke ranks and voted to remove the president from office. And immediately, he was the pariah of the Republican Party. There are people saying they should ban him from... being allowed to caucus with the party.
They wanted him banned from CPAC.
They did. No, they didn't. They did ban him.
Oh, they did ban him from CPAC. Holy shit. I thought oh my God.
Unless they changed it. What I read was he has been told you are no longer invited. So they disinvited him from CPAC. He's been
disavowed.
Former Republican candidate for president is now being told you're not one of us anymore because you voted your conscience. I think what he did was the right thing to do. I respect him for doing it. But I can't go as far as some people are putting this in the profiles and courage category.
Yeah.
He's a 72-year-old senator from Utah with 4 years left on his term and enough money to buy the state of Utah twice.
Right.
He'll be fine. Yeah. So this wasn't and it'll cost him politically, but I heard a lot of people, including Sherrod Brown, saying that the Republican conversations behind closed doors were, what the fuck are we going to do? We got to get rid of this guy. But if we do that, our careers are over. Fuck it, let's roll over.
Yeah,
I don't think that's an exact quote. Yeah, but it's pretty close.
You remember when right before the Senate trial, you and I talked about this on the show, and you thought that there would be more senators that voted, and I said no, they're cowards. They will not. And Mitt Romney was the only one who really proved, you know, to have any balls in this situation. And this was my anticipated turnout. I didn't even really think about Romney. As I heard it, like I heard it when he made the announcement live, or when the announcement was made, and I was like, huh, interesting. You know, I text you. And you're just like, only 19 more to go. And I'm like, well, that's not gonna happen.
You're
but
right.
You know, it had a very John McCain-esque feel to it.
I agree.
I don't think Mitt Romney is going anywhere. I don't think he's going to join the Democratic Party. I don't think he's, going to break from the Republicans. I think that he made his stand. You're right. He's got 4 years left on his term as senator. He's going to ride it out. I think this gives him the freedom to even say or do more of what he wants and feels. I'm not sure exactly what that is. But I think he just did what he was just like, fuck it, I'm going to be 72. I don't foresee him actually making another run at president at this point.
No, of course not.
I mean, he'll be 76
years old.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's at a point now where he's just like, fuck it, I'm just going to do what I want. And, you know.
Yeah. So I was watching Bill Maher last night. By the way, his opening guest was your boy, Steve Bannon, who looks great.
What do you mean by he looks great? He lost weight? Has he showered?
His face wasn't blotchy or red at all.
Okay.
Now, maybe that's good makeup work. I mean, it's the difference between. Sure. But I was like, this guy looks. Every time I saw him during his term with Trump, he looked like he'd been out, you know, slamming vodka till 3 a.m. He looked good last night.
But part of that was by design, right? When he was at Breitbart, and I don't know how much you listened to him when he was still on Breitbart, but his whole shtick was he was an everyday man. It's me and you, brother. We're in this together, brother. We're side by side. We're on the same level. And now, mind you, he's a guy who worked for Goldman Sachs. He's a guy who worked in Hollywood. He's a guy who's still making money off of Seinfeld. You know, like, Steve Bannon is not just... So he's not like... Andrew Wilkow is one of those guys who... I'm not sure why he is on fucking Sirius. Like, he started on college radio down in Florida in Gainesville. Not even at the University of Florida. Just some, you know, East-West North Florida State Tech On the radio down there, and has built a very good career for himself. But I mean, the guy, like, why is anyone listening to him? He's got nothing behind his name other than he's been on the radio for 20 fucking years. Steve Bannon, though, is different. He is not an everyman. He is not your average guy. Yes, he's been divorced a bunch of times, but that's about the only thing he has in common with most of his listeners. I mean, because the guy is worth, you know, probably a few, probably close to $100 million himself.
You know, there was a moment where Bannon and Ma were going back and forth, and you could tell by their body language and everything else, they're buddies. Yes. I'll bet they hang out at the same parties in Beverly Hills. I wouldn't shock me if Mar is smoking weed and passing right down to his boy, Steve Bannon.
Yeah.
It was clear that these guys are the elites that we should be fighting against.
Do you remember, I sent you an article about the girl who was like an alt-right, like super far-right.
Yeah, and she was
a racist, and she ends up flipping because she realized she was basically being used as a pawn, and she was really a bag of shit. But in that article that I sent you, there was a section where she's talking about she's at a party with Steve Bannon and others, and Bannon is like introducing her to other people, a lot of conservative far right wingers. But there are a few other names that were slipped in there that these people aren't right wing. They were just they're your run of the mill, you know, East Coast / Hollywood elites that all blend in, and it wasn't about politics, it was just about class, right? And Steve Bannon is in those circles, and he was bringing his Breitbart people into those circles so that they could see about it, understand the culture, and then, hey, now that you know what they're like and you've got some access to them, now use it to, you know, you basically use it against them.
Yep. One other thing I want to say from watching the show last night with Bill Maher's show, he made the statement that he believes that Mitt Romney did what he did because he still has political aspirations and he could possibly be on the vice presidential part of the Democratic ticket, which I think is one of the dumbest takes I've ever fucking heard.
So you told me this. We had this conversation about, I don't know,
30 minutes ago.
Right. And I agreed with you. Complete horseshit. And then all sorts of bells just started to click in my head. So I don't believe that's why Mitt Romney did it.
Right.
But there's a way that could actually work where he proves to be right. And the reason why Michael Bloomberg is buying himself into this whole thing.
Yes,
right?
He is.
I mean, the dude's worth $60 billion, right? Michael Bloomberg is the billionaire that Donald Trump wants to be, right? Donald Trump is worth nowhere near what Bloomberg. I don't care if Trump is worth $1 billion, $2 billion, or even 10, right? He's still 50. If he's worth $10 billion, which I don't believe that Donald Trump is worth that, right? Now he's rich as fuck, and you and I are not, right? But even if he's worth $10 billion, he's still $50 billion short of what Michael Bloomberg is worth, right? Like that's an insane amount of money, right? Yep. Bloomberg is one of the top 10 richest people in the country, so. Michael Bloomberg is buying himself into this election. Michael Bloomberg also was a Republican, probably is still a Republican. He is only a Democrat by name. But what it is that Michael Bloomberg he hates Trump because Bloomberg is a legit billionaire, a legit self-made billionaire. And super uber rich people, if you've ever been around them, what they do not like are frauds, people that pretend to be one of them, right? Like, they don't mind if you're a fraud, if you're fucking somebody on the side, and you're lying to your wife. They don't care if you're stealing money. They don't care about, you know, extorting your workers and all that shit. But what they don't like is you to lie about being on the same level as them when it comes to how just fuck you money rich you are, right? Bloomberg hates that about Donald Trump. That hate and despise that Bloomberg has for Trump is what Trump has for Obama, right? Like, Obama, you motherfucker, how dare your black ass gets in there and gets all this praise and adulation and people telling you how great you are and blah, blah, blah. I'm Donald fucking Trump. I'm rich and I'm white and I'm from New York.
You made fun of me at a correspondence. Right,
like, how dare you have the audacity, blah, blah, blah. So, but, like, Bloomberg is just like, this motherfucker, he thinks he's rich. He's like, I will buy your entire organization and destroy you. That's like his mentality, and that's what he's doing right now. Right? I think there's an exact reason why Bloomberg has said he's willing to spend $2 billion, and I think he knows that Donald Trump is worth $2 billion, and he is saying, I will literally piss this money down the drain, that I will piss your net worth down the drain to beat you in this race, and when I do, you will suck my dry balls. Like, that is where I feel Bloomberg is at.
Well, I don't know about the sucking the dry balls.
All of that to say, he was a Republican. He's still a Republican at heart, and that is how that could work, where Bloomberg gets in, he looks at everybody in the field, says, ugh, gross, looks at Mitt Romney and says, come to the dark side.
You know, that's interesting.
That's the only way I could make it work.
If that actually, I was wondering where you were going with this.
And that is not where Bill Maher is.
No, it is not where Bill Maher is. But Bloomberg did come up a lot, and I had considered him to be irrelevant to this point. I'm no longer calling him irrelevant. By the way, I almost jumped in and said the difference between Bloomberg and Trump is Bloomberg doesn't slap his name on everything.
Yes, he does.
But he does.
Yes, he does.
But he does.
He slapped his name on his own fucking TV network.
Right. And I almost said that would be the most inaccurate statement I've made in a very long time.
He's got a magazine. He's got a website. He's got a TV channel. I
just wanted you to know that thought went there, and then the brain stopped it. The brain actually went, don't do it.
I might have thrown the whole bottle at you and not just the cap.
But Bloomberg is sadly maybe viable in terms of getting his name out there. Now, he doesn't plan to show up until Super Tuesday, correct?
Right.
I was down in Tennessee a couple weeks ago, and you could not avoid seeing Bloomberg ads. Are they doing the same thing here?
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't watch a lot of TV that has ads on it.
I don't either, but I mean, so this is the other thing about Bloomberg, right? And I've looked into it because I as soon as he said he was getting into the race, I went, oh shit, right? Because I just don't like him as a candidate. But here's the problem. Bloomberg is doing two things. He is flooding everywhere that's going to be voting on Super Tuesday. He's flooding them with money and ads. He's got staff all over the place, and his staff, they are contracted through November.
Okay.
So in a political campaign like this, if you're a presidential campaign, like you basically do it, you break the election cycle up into quarters, right? And your staff, like they're scheduling states through, you know, certain periods of time, through the primaries, through the caucuses. And then, you know, if you get to that point, then you kind of renegotiate to get through the election. Well, what Bloomberg is doing with his staff is saying, you're through November no matter what. If I don't become the nominee, we will be working for the nominee, and we will be working for Democrats down the ticket to push out, you know, to try to take over the Senate, to try to take over Congress, and obviously to take over the White House. Now, the other thing about that, the DNC now has to look at him and say, okay, this guy can basically fund his own presidential campaign, and we don't, without a single dollar from us as a national committee.
Right.
Right. So now the DNC is saying, okay, if he does that, if he wins, and we don't have to worry about supporting him, then we can now sink our resources into everybody else. Right. And so now all of a sudden the DNC has motivation for Bloomberg to get into that spot, because it's just more resources for them to really focus in places like Kentucky. Right. Like, no one really feels that Mitch McConnell is on the ropes as, you know, for the Senate, but if all of a sudden you could bet, and I'm not sure what the woman's name is
she's the ex-military.
Yeah, ex-military.
Really, really impressive lady.
Like, she is impressive, and I like her, and I wish she had a shot in hell. Bloomberg all of a sudden gives her that chance, because now the DNC can flood her with money that, like, way beyond what they would have ever been able to do if they had to support a candidate who like a Buttigieg or even a Warren, even a Bernie, any of them. Right, because Bloomberg can just sit there and just say, "All right, I've already spent a billion. I'm going to spend another billion and a half on getting elected. You guys spend that money elsewhere."
Well, I mean, if that's happening, and I believe it is, welcome aboard, Mike. Throw that money into here. Now, I don't want you I don't want to vote for you for president.
I don't either.
If he runs against Trump, I will.
Yeah, I mean, I had this conversation with someone else, and I said I'll hold my nose and do it. You know, and I just strongly urge that, you know, if there's any firearms out there that you've got your eye on, you might want to jump on that before January, you know, 21 or 22, whenever they do the inauguration.
Right.
Because he's a huge anti-gun guy.
He is a huge anti-gun guy.
And that's why I'm anti-him. Like, along with all his other...
There's other reasons. Right. I mean, to be a huge anti-gun guy as a New York City mayor really doesn't matter, because gun laws in New York City are so restrictive as it is.
And they have been. It's not like for the last 30 years. Right. It's not something he introduced.
Right. But, which, by the way, I think makes him unelectable nationally.
Mm-hmm.
I think in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, if your whole thing is, you don't need those guns, we're going to take them, which is not too far from where it's stands, kiss those states goodbye.
Yep.
And Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing that we need as Democrats to win is to get those Midwestern states, which brings me to Pete Buttigieg. His performance was very good in a very white state. I know that's probably what you were going to say next. He's now running in another very white state in New Hampshire, which we'll get to in a bit. And I don't know. He did not look good in the debate. He was then the target of the debate last night. I don't know why I can't talk today. But he was targeted a lot. And at one point, he was asked basically how he would explain to African-American voters that during his time, that he's on their side, despite the fact that during his time as mayor of South Bend, marijuana-related arrests went up. And he gave a tap dance garbage answer. And then I think it was Elizabeth Warren was asked, was that answer sufficient? And she just went, no.
Yeah, I mean, and Buttigieg has a serious problem. When I read, I read from multiple sources, and even like a friend of mine works for the University of Notre Dame in their ticket sales department, and he's been there for a while. And I was like, what do you know about Buttigieg? And he's like, oh boy.
Okay.
And he kind of gave me the 411 on what happened when Buttigieg got elected. And I'm like, okay. And you know about the sheriff, or about the, not the sheriff.
Chief of police.
Yeah, the chief of police. And so you've got that story, but there were so many other stories that really haven't hit mainstream media. And I'm not going to throw them out there just because I'm not a reporter, so I haven't gone and vetted with multiple sources and things like that. But just a lot of things that would make me say, ooh, not good. And my friend is black as well. Which, you know, he's definitely like a raisin in a bowl of milk for so many different reasons, considering what his job is and where he is.
Right.
But you know, but he's very conscious of what's happening politically around him. And he's just like, you know, he's like, he thinks it's just crazy that this guy is running for president. And then when you see some of the different stories that have come out, you know, The Guardian and I think Vox did a write-up and a couple other news sources. I mean...
So his strength has been that he's been essentially anonymous. That's not going to last.
No, it's not. It's not. That's gone, right? I mean, that's gone. And what's really frustrating is that people, you know, white people are just, you know, white Pete Buttigieg supporters are just like, well, I don't see why the black community is not supporting him. You know, the stuff that happened, you know, that they're claiming with the chief of police and all the race stuff, that happens in every town. It's got to be because he's gay. Now, listen, I think there's a portion of the black community that says, not a fan because he's gay. There's definitely that aspect. But there's also a portion of the white community that says the same thing.
Did you see the woman in Iowa who wanted to take her vote back when she found out he was gay?
Yes. Yes.
First of all, that woman looked exactly like, if I said to draw that woman, you could draw that woman.
Right. I mean, like, you know, like, I could just pick her out of a lineup. But, I mean, I think you have just, that's not just black people. That's just, you have a lot of your further right Christians are going to be anti-gay.
Right. And it's true of whites in the South are equally anti-gay, but they're not voting for a Democrat anyway.
Not, right.
So I mean, that's why I don't care about them.
Right. But, you know, I mean, the issue that he does have with some, you know, with some of the black population is the fact that he's gay. But I think a larger percent of the population, black people are very politically aware, right? Like, I mean, a lot of times we are left out of the process because of all these other exterior factors in terms of being able to vote, working, you know, identification, location, prison, all these sort of factors that impact our ability to vote as a group or in mass. But we're still a very aware group of people in terms of what's happening politically. Like we know who these people are, and we dig into what their backgrounds are, because how the fuck is this going to affect us, right? This country doesn't have a great history of treating us well. So we're paying attention to the people that are being put in office, you know, locally, state, and federally. So there are plenty of people who are fine with him being gay, but his track record with the black community is not good. It wasn't just the issue that happened with the chief of police. There were other positions within the police department which he could have controlled and impacted that would not have been just so obviously racist that he duck and hid behind, well, I can't talk about it, it's private, and I don't want to, you know, if I do, it could violate this and that, and I don't want to step in and get involved. Like, again, just dancing around a lot of this stuff, and that shit turns people off. That's why I don't like him. You know what I mean? It's just like he's he's charismatic. Yes, he's a veteran.
Rhodes Scholar. He's a smart guy.
Congratulations, right? But I mean, like my like I, listen, this is a relatively serious issue. The fact that you don't deal with people who look like me very well. So why the fuck would I put you in charge of all? Like, it's just like, well, for the greater good, I'm going to literally could be physically sacrificing myself, you know, just because, what, to make who feel better? Fuck that guy.
Well, I mean, to me, everything for Buttigieg comes down to South Carolina, right? If he does great in New Hampshire, again, it's a 90%+ white state. If he can do well in South Carolina, I'll consider him a viable candidate. If he can't, then I think once the bigger picture gets here, he's toast. But we've skipped over the State of the Union, which had some fireworks. So the State of the Union, which
firework. I mean, it was like a...
Sorry, we had a campaign rally that we called the State of the Union.
Not only a campaign rally, but I mean, it felt like a reality show. You know, agreed. I mean, going back and looking at it, I mean, just the, you know, the reunion. Like, and listen, these are good things. Reunion of the family and the
Tuskegee Airmen.
Yes, these are all great things. I mean, Rush Limbaugh getting the Medal of Freedom,
which, by the way, was totally a TV show moment. And Melania's got your prize right here.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so staged, so transparent.
And Melania giving, I mean, like...
She had it in her purse.
Right, like, so Melania's Vanna White? Like, what the fuck is this?
Basically.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just like the way she was used as a prop, the fact that he gives it to Rush Limbaugh, and to me it was more, it resembled, this wasn't, I'm doing this just to piss people off. This was a... Hey, Rush, thank you. You're the reason why I got elected. You know, yes, Breitbart, all these other things, but you have had the voice of the conservative movement for so long. You supported me. You told my lies. You spun the web.
Right.
And here it all is. Look at us. It looks like we're, you know, I didn't get impeached, even though we fucked around. It looks like there's a good chance I could get reelected, you know. Here you go.
Right.
Like, this is
your victory. And he was also diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but I mean, it's just like, you know, like here, like that sucks, but you know, like all your greatest dreams and wishes have come true. It, you know, like here's your crowning achievement.
A supermodel is putting the Medal of Freedom around your neck in front of the president who's ass you've kissed for the last 3 years or more. So, it was a reality show. And going back to Bill Maher, I apologize, but he made the point that Trump seemed to be aggressively reaching out to the black community by bringing in the Tuskegee Airmen.
And it's
smart.
I mean, listen, Trump did some things with the black community even in 15 and 16 that you have to give him credit for, right? I mean, like, was he genuine? No, but I mean, no Democrat has been genuine. I mean, I think Obama was genuine when he did anything he did with the black community in terms of his candidacy and even as president, right? I mean, people get pissed because he didn't solve all the issues that black people have as president. But, I mean, Obama, the fact that he even showed empathy and related to me as a African-American man or, you know, families and understanding the connection, that's a huge step. No president has ever done anything like that before. Right? Like, they just have it. You know why? Because they couldn't, and that's okay. But Trump, while there was no, I don't believe there was minimal sincerity, but he went to Detroit and sat in black churches and talked with people and talked with families and talked to people fresh out of prison. He did all that in 15 and 16. This isn't me making it up. It's a fact. You can go find it.
Right.
Sorry to ruin your, not you, but not in him. General, yep. You know, sorry to crush your dreams that he's just this evil, maniacal person, you know, who everywhere he goes, he just, if he sees a black person, he slaps him, you know, like that's just not how it is. Like, I mean, he's just much more calculated than that. And so the problem that you're going to have is that, you know, how am I going to say? So 14% of black men voted for Trump last time around.
Right.
Right. Now, black women were 98%. You know, I mean, like, so
against
Trump. Yeah. So, I mean, but you have the issue that you have is that Democrats have not done a good job of really much of anything since he's been elected. And the problem is going to be is if you lose this time around, instead of 14%, if it's 16% of black men and 3 or 4% of black women, right, that vote for Trump, it's still a drop in the bucket. But enough all things considered, that's enough to kind of push close states.
Virginia, North Carolina, Florida right. can become interesting.
And can literally push him back over the top. So those are things that people need to be aware of.
So after finishing his State of the Union address, standing right behind him, Nancy Pelosi took the speech and tore it up, which I have mixed feelings about. First of all, I did think it was kind of funny.
Because I did too.
He refused to shake her hand, or at least he didn't shake her hand when it was extended, whether it was a quick turnaround yeah. or an intentional snub. I would bet big money on intentional snub. But regardless, she then responds with, I could be more childish than you. Mm-hmm. And while you're finishing your big moment, I'm... Which, again, I initially found it hilarious. At first, I was watching him like, is she? I'm like, is that a tradition that like when it's over you do? I know now, but I was just like, I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I was thinking this can't be as weird as what I'm watching. Well, it was, and she was. It was so two things about it. It was childish on her part. It was not, you know, whatever. To me, it also sent a little bit of a I can fight dirty too, you goofball. I'm trying to use my words nicely, but the outrage that was expressed by. Amongst others, Mike Pence, who I believe said something to the effect of, she might as well be tearing up the Constitution.
Yes.
Fuck you, Mike Pence. Get out of here. Fuck you.
Like, you haven't said anything worth a shit since you were also elected.
The faux outrage and, oh, this is the most terrible thing. I'm like,
You got that moron down in Florida, Matt Gaetz, talking about like, oh, she needs to be brought up on charges because, you know, she ripped up this official document that should be archived. And my thought was like, why does it need to be archived? Like the speech itself is already archived. Like you don't need to keep copies.
It's not if it was notarized to be filed in the National Archive and she tore it up then, I would say, okay that's wrong.
Okay, we can have a conversation.
I'd say, here's some scotch tape.
Right. I mean, you technically still have them. I mean, it's not like she ripped them up and then burned them, you know, pulled a Sinead O'Connor on Saturday Night Live.
But, right.
You
right.
know, she just, I don't know. I thought it was funny. And then, because I knew immediately, I was like, this bitch is being super petty. I love it. And she ripped it up. And not even because, it's not, again, because I hate Trump. I just, when you sit back and you watch, if you just take it, if you step out of your political seat, right, and you're not worried about how much you hate Trump or how much you love Democrats or hate them, whatever, and you just sit back and watch it, you're like, this is ridiculous. You know, right? It's just ridiculous. And like, I laugh at it. And I really didn't give it much more thought, right? And then it just turns into this thing where people are, you got Matt Gaetz out in Florida wanting to bring her up on charges, and then they're rewinding the tape. Oh, before he started the speech, she double-checked and she pre-ripped.
I didn't see that.
Oh, yes, they did. They zeroed in, and she did. There's someone caught her on camera where she pulled the speech down, she did like a little mini-rip, and then she puts it back on her thing nice and neat. That's well, you know, hilarious. Fox News went in and zoomed in on where she pre-ripped it a little bit. And it was a whole thing, oh my God, which is, again, watching it, just sitting back objectively and watching how everyone is acting right now is just funny if it were a movie, but it's not, it's real, it's the future
of our country.
Right, and it's like, oh, it, like you, when you're done laughing, you're like, oh shit, like this is real.
Yeah. But... I mean, it was another one of these, I can get under this guy's skin with something as simple as tearing up a few pieces of paper. Now, I don't think he took the bait, particularly. I didn't...
Oh, I don't... I mean...
I'm sure he tweeted about it, but...
Okay, so I think the thing is with Trump, I don't think Nancy Pelosi cares if he actually reacts publicly. She knows him, right? She's been with him in closed doors, behind closed doors. She did that. That was, yeah, she wanted to make a public statement. But she knows that Trump is seething about that. I guarantee you he went back to his quarters in the West Wing and he just said all sorts of foul shit about her.
I'm sure you're right.
She knows it and she doesn't give a shit. And that's the one, when she was made the Speaker of the House, I was not a fan. I've grown to appreciate her cunning. But that's the part about her that I like is that she's just a mean broad. You know, I mean, like she did that to fuck with him, and I guarantee you that is something he may never let go.
And I respect it in the sense of she's playing in a largely male, you know, arena. She's been elevated to this position, first woman ever to do so, and I think she likes showing people, don't fuck with me. And
I mean, this is another case. You can bring the all male in it all you want. I think she is just a
okay. But I think that gives her that much more reason to fight the way she does.
True.
Okay.
I mean, I think if she were a dude, I mean, she's one of those people where you take it, you take her out of her, you know, Donna Karan suits or whatever, and you just put her in a, you know, Tommy Hilfiger male, you know what I mean? Like, you swap it out for a dude. I mean, I think she's still a cut-your-throat sort of person.
Agreed.
Like, some people are just like that.
And then we get to New Hampshire. So everyone leaves Iowa, and they don't even know the results yet.
Right.
But they have to...
Which is not their fault.
No, it's not their fault.
I mean, I guess other than Pete Buttigieg, because he invested in the company, but whatever.
But he invested... So did
Biden. I know. It's a horseshit story.
It is. And it's funny, because all of the really pro-Bernie media outlets, like the Young Turks and Kyle Kulinski and David Pakman, they're all spinning that conspiracy theory.
Other than the Young Turks, I actually have no idea who any of those others are.
They end up in my feed, and I've listened to them a bunch of times. They're left-wing, total Bernie folks.
Mm.
And the Bernie folks are looking for anything. I mean, they see Buttigieg as an establishment-type guy, even though he's anyone who's not Bernie, they're not going to be happy.
Like, yeah? They're just miserable fucks.
So... During the week they were having town before the debate, they each had their own town halls, and because I'm me, I watched a fair bit of them, and I was particularly interested in seeing Elizabeth Warren's because she's kind of done. I'm kind of done with her, and I pretty much announced that.
Yeah.
And I literally put on Facebook like, she's got 15 minutes to win me back. And 15 minutes expired, and a bunch of friends were like, so what happened? And I'm like, I'm giving her 15 more. And I am so glad I did, because I really want to play this. So let me set the stage here. She's at a town hall in New Hampshire. She's asked a question by a black woman about how she would handle racial issues and why she is right for the black community. And here's what she had to say.
All differently. And I try to learn and listen for that. One of the groups I've spent a lot of time with is Black Women Four. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but it's a wonderful group of women who I have to say are really outspoken and, dare I say it, pushy.
The side eye that she gets when she said that was epic.
Now, in the clip, there's a woman, and that's courtesy of what, MSNBC or CNN?
CNN.
All right, just so we don't get in trouble for whatever. But thanks, CNN. But there's a black woman sitting on stage, and when she says, you know, I've had the pleasure to work with, you know, a number of black women, and dare I say, what did she call them?
Pushy. Yeah.
And then she said something else.
She tried to recover. Well, she said, she tried to recover after that and said, what I mean by that is they pushed me to get better and make it better. And the woman who asked the question just went, thank you. But
it speaks just to her tone deafness on this. It's like, listen, you know, one of my initial beefs with Elizabeth Warren was the fact that she, you know, pushed this whole thing that she was Native American, and it's been something that she's been pushing for 30 fucking years. But she used that to get into the University of Harvard teaching. And it's one thing if you just check a box, but it's a whole nother thing if you not only just check the box, you use this idea of you being Native American with no proof other than family stories. And then, you know, Harvard then turns that and says, you know, this is our first non-white female employee. And then they do, you know, a Harvard, you know, law journal write-up on her and how this is such a progressive move, right? I mean, and then a lot of your career is then based off of that, and you use that, right? I'm the first woman of color that Harvard ever hired. And it's just like, okay, Liz, but you look like you're Swedish and Irish, and there's nothing in you, or there's nothing about you that even says non-white.
You make Jim look like Jay-Z, but okay.
I mean, you look like fucking Pablo Escobar compared to her. So it just, and then the fact that she, you know, she pushed it out there to the point where she takes this test, and literally you are less white than she is, and you're pretty white. You know, I mean, like, you tan well, but I mean, it's just really...
Yeah,
like, that really never set well with me. And then the fact that she's still, like, she just kind of was basically given a pass on it.
She took that DNA test and found out she was, like, 0.01% and went, look, I told the truth.
Right.
Like, did you?
Oh, God. I mean, and I think Trump, you know, Trump rattled her cage on it.
Oh, yeah.
And I would have, too.
Sure.
The fact that more you know, the fact that Kamala Harris and Cory Booker and all that, you know, played nice is kind of part of their problem, why they're still not here. I mean, there's many other reasons why, but, I mean, it's just like you had a chance to take her out and you didn't. And now she's fading because I think she's shown that she's not nearly as progressive or consistently progressive as right. Bernie is. So, and she was sharing a lot of his crowd. And then my whole thing is like, listen, you know, as a law student with, you know, a heavy student loan burden, I don't really like the idea of wiping out student loans, but if you're going to do it, right? Bernie's just like, we're wiping them all out, right? And I can't stand Bernie, and I think he's a danger to the Republic, but I'm like, all right, motherfucker, if you're going to wipe him out, wipe him out.
Bernie is really growing on me.
Ugh, gross.
I mean, really growing on me.
I don't trust him. He spent way too much time palling around in Russia. He spent, like, long periods of time in Russia, you know, just really embracing communism and things like that. And it just, that shit makes me, I don't like it. I mean, there's video of it, Jim.
Okay, fine.
Like, sitting at the dinner table, calling people comrade, like, come on now. Like, I mean, I'm not paranoid, you know, Manchurian mm-hmm. candidate, you know, conspiracy theorist. But I think that I got boundaries, and Bernie crosses them. Not to mention, he's just a fucking crotchety, old, annoying dude. And again, okay, if you're going to wipe out student loans and wipe them all out, okay, I can dig it. The Medicare for all, I mean, I'm neutral on it because...
I would love it because I'm self-employed.
I'm sure, but I just, again, we're not good at running these big, massive programs. You know, I mean, and it's just like by the time they figure out the growing pains, you and I are going to be dead anyway. So, I mean, it's just like, you know, the thing that's probably going to kill you is you're going to get a bill that you don't think you should get and have a fucking heart attack.
Like, I'm glad this is so amusing for you.
I can just, I'm just saying, like...
You're not picturing...
But I just, I don't know. I just, but whatever. I mean, if he's the one, like, listen, I'll vote against Trump. You know, I've got a beef with everybody who's left. I really don't have a major beef with Amy Klobuchar. My beef with all the Democratic candidates is their stance on guns across the board, right? Like, they all suck.
And they were pounding that drum last night at the debate big time.
I mean,
to the point where you're going to turn off your Midwestern and viable Southern states with that shit.
And they've all turned me off because of it, right? So, I mean, and I was hoping that with Bernie being in Vermont, right, which is a big hunting state and a big gun rights state and everything else, especially being so close to New Hampshire, that maybe he'd have a reasonable gun policy, you know, on it. Nope. Basically just shy of we're going to come and take your guns.
Bernie had been relatively well-graded by the NRA, up until he tried to become a presidential candidate.
Yep.
I mean, I believe he was once had an A from the NRA. Yes. Vermont had very, very lax gun laws.
Mm-hmm.
And does not have, you know, serious gun violence problems.
Right.
So, but then again, it's hard to find another person in Vermont to shoot them. So, and there's Ben and Jerry's and free wheat and legal weed, so why would you? Anyway, he's starting to grow on me. This New Hampshire primary is going to be huge. Because with Warren and Bernie being in border states, you would expect them to play fairly well there. Buttigieg has to do huge here because this is the last lily white state for a while.
Yep.
And I really think if Warren comes in fourth or fifth again, I think she drops out.
What about Biden? Biden's got to stay in at least through South Carolina.
Oh yeah, Biden. You know, he'll go that distance.
Yeah, I mean he's going to go at least through Super Tuesday. Like, I just need a black voter somewhere.
Right, right.
Which is just weird, right? Like, I mean, because if you really look at Biden's track record, like, from a race standpoint, it's not great. Right? I mean, and, like, his track record in general, just as a senator, isn't great. You know, I mean, like, he got caught up in some shit, you know, in terms of banking and, you know, some other things. So I just, it still blows my mind that this guy is where he is with the black vote. And we'll kind of see how it shakes out.
His biggest redeeming characteristic has to be 8 years as Obama's vice president. That has to be
that's just sad. Right? I'm on the record of saying I didn't like Obama or I didn't like Biden as a VP pick. The first time, the second time, I don't like that he was the vice president. I don't like he was that close to being the guy in charge if something ever happened to Obama. I don't like his politics. I don't like anything about the guy. And, you know.
But other than that, he's got a hell of a singing voice.
Right. I mean, and then, you know, I was kind of, as much as I thought, I mean, I was kind of rooting for this Hunter Biden thing for him to just be like, you know what? Like, do the right thing, Joe. Just protect your son. Step down and shut the fuck up and go away. But no.
Well, I mean, I agree. New Hampshire is everything to him. Well, you're right. He's going to go on to South Carolina. But if he doesn't finish top three in New Hampshire, South Carolina becomes probably his draw the line moment.
Yeah, but I think it can help him because, I mean, it could catapult him if he takes first or even second in South Carolina. But, I mean, I think he probably, with the amount of support he has compared to everybody else, I think he probably ends up taking first in South Carolina. And then that takes you, I think the next one is maybe Nevada, which Correct. Is another state that he could probably do well in. And then I believe that takes you into Super Tuesday. You know, and then if it, you know, then it's just, all right, well, that's where, you know, that's the money shot right there for the most part. You got California, Texas, and probably like 10 other states, I think, going. So, we'll you see. Know, I mean, I think he stays no matter what until Super Tuesday. You could lose Warren after New Hampshire if she tanks, because I don't think she really has much of the black vote, and it's not even worth her time.
Well, you sent me an article where the black staff members from her team are leaving her.
Yeah, because, you know, they said it's a...
Was she being pushy?
Right, dare I say. Yeah, I mean, so she has a black problem. You know, Buttigieg has a black problem. I think Bernie does well with a very... specific group in the black community, but for the most part, I mean, I think Bernie, like a lot of black people think like I do about Bernie, you know, kind of in the middle, but not big overwhelming fans. But one of the things he's throwing out there wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for us. So if he gets elected, fine, you figure out a way to keep your head down. But I think this election for a lot of people is just, all right, let's get Trump out of here. Yeah. Whoever we put in, just... stay the course, you know. Focus on investing and just.
One stat I heard that I found very interesting was that 4 million voters from 2016 voted but left their presidential ballot blank. Now I heard it on the Bill Maher show, one of his panel members. So I have not vetted that number, but that's a number I had not heard before. And if that's true, that is massive, because that would be people who were probably like me who said, Hillary's going to win. I don't like her. I'm not voting for her. Fuck it.
It also depends on the state.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
if it's California or New York, doesn't matter.
This is a panel member.
If it's Texas.
If there were 4 million people who were going to the ballot box but did not check a box for president last time and they do this time, that changes things a lot.
But it depends on the state.
Oh, sure.
You know, I mean, because if a majority of them are in... Even if they're divided between California and New York and, let's say, I don't know, Texas, I mean, Texas maybe, I mean, then, because I think Texas is a winner-take-all sort of state.
It is.
You know, so, it doesn't matter.
Okay. Right? Well, I'm just saying, that's something I have not
taken
into account.
I agree, it could, but it really all depends on where those people are placed. Because, so, I mean, that's how we ended up with Trump.
Right. So, Steve, I'd love to talk to you more, but I can't.
Why?
Because... the XFL is kicking off today, and I can't miss a minute. Actually, it's already kicked off. The first game's probably over by now. The XFL is here.
Well, you know what? I'm going to try. I just, it's a rough weekend. I got a lot going on, but I will watch. I'm interested. You know, Vince McMahon, we've already seen this once.
Yes, we have.
With him. It didn't last long.
Did it go a full season? I don't think it did.
I think it went a full season.
Maybe one season. Okay.
And then it was done after that. I mean, it was short, you know, some abbreviated sure. thing. And then we just last year or the year before, we had that other, no, it was last year.
Yeah, the AAFL or whatever that was.
Yeah, I mean, and that thing, that
lasted like 3 weeks, right?
It was a month. I mean, it was 3 or 4 games. And I know they're still getting sued. And these guys, and they're being total dicks about it. So that league, the AAFL or whatever, they are not releasing players so that they can be picked up by the NFL or the XFL.
That is bullshit.
Yes.
That is complete bullshit.
They're not releasing players from their contracts. And I'm just like, wow.
I mean, I guess you want to pay me to do nothing. You would argue that people do that already.
They don't have any money. They can't because they literally don't have any money. So
that should be illegal.
Right. I mean, like, that's something you should be able to take to court and just say, look, I mean, they breached the contract. Like, screw them. I'm, you know. And if I'm a player, I would say, fuck you. You know, I mean, I would tell my agent, like, right. Listen. Like,
I'm doing this.
But the problem is the players aren't good enough to where an NFL team is going to even say, well, just like, well, if that's your deal, we'll just go get someone else off the street, which is kind of the downside. And you would hope that the NFL would not be dicks about it, but they just, again, they can afford to right. be dicks about it, so they're going to. But, I mean, if I'm the NFL, I would just, like, I would do my best to bury a league like that. So I would go and take the players and say, go ahead and try to sue me. You know, like, you're the one who breached the contract by not being able to pay your bills. And so there are, you know.
I mean, the NFL, back in the days of the USFL, the NFL showed how vicious it can be in court.
Right.
And they protect their brand.
Again, part another reason why we have fucking Trump. We've talked about it on
yep.
the show.
Yep.
You know, I mean, so, I mean, but USFL was a Trump, another Trump disaster.
My curiosity, I will be watching some XFL today just because I want to see how it resembles its original version. Because the original version was like a Coors Light commercial. I mean, it was girls in hot tubs in the end zone, and I mean, it was just it said cheerleaders aren't sexual enough. We're doing girls in hot tubs, and this game isn't violent enough. So instead of a coin toss, they would literally throw a ball out, have two guys go fight for the ball, and whoever came up with it got the ball. In this world, where football has been, they've been doing everything they can to take the danger and violence out of it, and where, you know, the Super Bowl halftime show, which we didn't talk about, shocked and upset so many people because it showed women doing sexual stuff. Because that's what
cheerleaders do. It wasn't even women doing sexual stuff. It was their outfits.
They were on a pole and whatever.
I mean, it's like, okay. And there was actually a lot of good messaging in that show, which we didn't get to talk about. But, you know, don't sit here and give me shit about Shakira and J-Lo, but then turn around and watch the Winter Olympics and watch figure skating and talk about how great it is and go America, well, right? With that, I mean, it's just like they're wearing literally the exact same fucking thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just as see-through and small and skimpy and everything. I mean, the gymnasts are wearing leotards, right? I mean, don't even think about watching swimming or, you know, like, or go watch beach volleyball. It's even less. Okay.
I do watch beach volleyball for that reason.
Right. I mean,
we established I'm a bad person.
Also, regular volleyball with the girls, those shorts are...
Yeah.
Like, I don't...
Do not complete your next thought.
My next thought was, I mean, that was a huge part of my problem in college. Like, where are you going, girls volleyball game? Why not?
I'm a big fan.
Like, I love girls a foot taller than me jumping up and down.
Smashing a ball. But, you know, with the way the political world has changed, I will be curious to see what the XFL does. Because they've been trying to do the, we're going to stand for the anthem and we're going to drive our trucks and do this and that.
Yeah.
But you can't do that and then play that same thing, can you?
Why?
Yeah, you can, but
why?
Not without being a complete hypocrite. But who cares about that?
No, I don't. I don't think any of that is hypocritical.
It's not hypocritical to say. Well, the hypocritical part is if there are girls in hot tubs and if they're swinging that angle again, you can't play.
It depends on what. Like, it depends on which. It depends on which conservative group you're talking about, right? I mean, like country music is filled with, you know, guys in big trucks
sure.
with girls in bikinis at parties
we both drive trucks for what it's worth, so.
Oh, that's true. I just despise country music, so.
Me too.
But, I mean, like, that's what a lot of country music is based around, is that idea of girls being free and American and boobies and bikinis
true.
And all that shit.
The point I was trying to make was, you can't be morally outraged by this and do that at the same time. And, again, I'll be curious to see how they try to put this out there. So I'm watching from a time capsule perspective. Having said that, anything you want to close out on?
Closing thoughts. No, Johnny Manziel will not be in the XFL. He said he does not want to be a part of another league that's going to fold. So that's interesting. There's no Johnny. What was his Johnny?
Johnny Football.
Johnny Football. Yes. There will be no Johnny Football in the XFL. So if you're going to watch or, you know, look at stats this weekend, then you're not going to find it. If that's what you're
looking
for. But
you will find Cardale Jones, who I'm a fan of and would like to see him
resurrect his career. Ohio State, you know, Ohio State legend because of, you know, leading us to a national title. So,
yep.
For sure. So, you know, good show, bud.
Thanks. We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. Jim at WhiskeyCongress.com if you want to email me. Steve at WhiskeyCongress.com if you want to email him. Thanks for listening. We are out.